carrying the dead skin wolves, and followed him down the hall.
"Was the Aratu not pleased?"
Brendel asked, stepping ahead to pace their captor.
"That wasn't entirely terrible," Vrad said, his robes snapping in his wake. "You could have worked a little harder to give it some flair. Next time, it's likely you'll be given weapons to see what you can really do."
"But we won."
"Yes, well, she won. Sort of."
Vrad fluttered a hand at Phasma.
"You mostly watched. It's not so much about winning, you know. It's about showing the Aratu something they've never seen before. The crowd and the Aratu himself are connoisseurs of experience, you see. The arena has shown us beautiful things and terrible things, and we live for the excitement. Every now and then something is so startling that the Aratu grants the performer freedom. But you're nowhere close. If you can't entertain, you'll wither away like the rest and die."
"Why is that? Does this grand city not hold enough charms?"
Vrad snorted.
"We can't leave the walls. Nothing ever changes. There are too many people and not enough food. Entertainment is all that we have. And the strangers we capture are the best sort of entertainment."
"And does no one challenge the Aratu?"
At that, Vrad stopped walking and stared at Brendel like he'd grown an extra head.
"Why would anyone challenge him? He has the best taste."
They were put in a different room this time, one that might have once served as a storage closet. It was barely big enough for them all to sit on the floor and eat the food left there. Strange stuff that wasn't dried meat or sea veg. None of it tasted good, but taste wasn't currently their problem. There was plenty of water, and it was the best water Siv had ever tasted, with no tang of salt or nutrients or the sea. The two dead wolves lay near the door untouched, as Vrad stood over the group watching them eat.
"What do you plan to do with the Lupulcus?"
he asked, amused. "Eat them," Phasma answered. It was a wonder she could talk, much less eat, considering that when she removed her helmet, her face was purple and black and bleeding. Her lips were smashed, one eye swollen shut. Siv watched her tenderly touch several teeth and grimace at the results. At least the food was soft, mostly gelatinous cubes and soft bits of some kind of sweet fruit. At that, Vrad laughed heartily.
"Eat diseased beasts? Is our food not good enough for you, then? There are those in the outer rings of the city who would kill for such riches."
"It's fine enough," Phasma answered. "But who knows how long you'll keep feeding us?"
"A comedian, too! You should work on that act. It'll get you fed as handily, but without the bruising and black eye."
The food was soon gone. There hadn't been much of it. The Skyr folk were accustomed to taking only as much as they needed, and to considering the needs of those around them. Torben was big, and keeping him big benefited everyone. Gosta was small, but she was still growing and would need proper food to heal her hurt leg. Phasma would also require nutrients to heal. Siv ate very little, knowing that she was well and also that she was not large. What she did eat, she ate for the child inside her. Still, it bothered her to see Brendel Hux, who had done so little, take as much food as anyone else. In the Skyr, the elderly, that being anyone over 40, naturally took less food. They couldn't fight, they didn't need extra weight, and they depended on the strength of younger backs and fists to keep them fed. But Brendel took what he wanted, and even Phasma didn't speak against it, although Siv saw her eyes narrow as Brendel took the last bite.
"Back to the barracks, then," Vrad said, "with your dead dogs, since that little request amused the Aratu. I do think he'd come watch you figure out how to butcher the bodies without knives if his keepers would let him set foot from the safety of his hallowed tower."
Phasma jerked her chin at the dogs, and the troopers picked them up. The entire group followed Vrod down the hall, and he walked as if he didn't have a care in the world. And perhaps he didn't, considering his guards had their blasters pointed at the dangerous prisoners walking uncuffed down the hallway. Siv couldn't grasp the attitudes here, the blatant disregard for safety and vigilance.
"Did you know this was once nothing but a fabric factory?"
Vrod knocked on a glass window, and Siv peeked in to see great machines moving, spitting out yet more of the billowing fabric.
"Aratu Station. Made the uniforms for Khonstar Mining Corporation. They built it here for the water. A huge spring, and once a river that ran past. Now we have machines that can make fabric. Endless fabric. Just dump sand into one and it'll make fabric all day long. But it can't make food, and it can't make the days go by any quicker, so you'd best find a way to entertain the Aratu without breaking all your bones. Because those machines don't make medicine either."
He opened the door, and every eye in the prison barracks looked up. Phasma walked in first, wearing her helmet and showing no outward sign of having been beaten nearly to death. The troopers came in behind her, and she pointed to a bloody stain on the floor.
"Put one of them there."
The stormtroopers looked at each other, and one of them tossed down his skin wolf without questioning her. The other one continued to hold his bloody prize, the gray skin drooping and smearing his armor with slurry blood.
"Have a good night. Be ready for tomorrow."
Vrod waved at them with his white hand, and the door slid closed.
"One of these dogs is ours. You can have the other one,"
Phasma said to the room's other occupants.
"Why?"
someone asked from the floor.
"What do you want?"
"We want no trouble, and the meat will go bad anyway."
Phasma turned away from the people slithering toward the carcass on the ground, and went to the bed where Ellie had lain that morning. The woman was gone, and two people lay in her bunk, their bellies round against their scrawny bones. One look from Phasma, and they all but leapt out of the bed, and crab-crawled out of her sight.
"Torben and Gosta."
"I can't fit in there,"
Torben complained.
"Try."
Gosta clambered up top, and Torben filled in the entire bottom bunk, the metal frame creaking under him. As Siv moved to check him for hidden injuries, not that she could do anything about the damage, she noticed something peculiar. Brendel and Phasma were conversing in the corner, their whispers too low for her to catch. But she watched Brendel reach into his jacket and produce something, a shiny tube, which he stabbed into Phasma's shoulder right between the plates of her armor. She didn't budge, didn't grunt, and certainly didn't grab his hand and crush the bones with her glove as punishment. Siv didn't know what was in that tube, but whatever it was, Phasma had agreed to it. And when it was done, the empty tube disappeared back into Brendel's jacket.
"Get some rest,"
Phasma said to her people. She took off her helmet and lay down on the floor beside Torben's bed. While Siv still fidgeted around him, checking his eyes and the dark bruises on his throat below the shadow of his beard, Phasma slipped into a deep sleep. Back home, Siv would have tended to Phasma's bruises first, offering her the strongest liniment and some herbs to chew that would help reduce swelling. Here, with no resources and no herbs, there was nothing she could do. Just like with the Detraxers, she was helpless without her pack. She checked on Gosta again before Torben caught her around the hips and pulled her into the tiny bed, tucking her in against his warm side and holding her close with his arm.
"This place is so wrong,"
she murmured against him.
"Then we'll leave it behind."
"I think you're concussed."
"Probably."
She fell asleep against him, and when she woke up, she was starving. She looked at the dead dog on the ground, the one Phasma had saved for their people. Reluctantly, hating herself for it, she began prodding it to find a soft spot. When she looked at Phasma's sleeping face, she found it mostly healed. The bruises were yellow, the swelling gone, the split skin drawn together by pink lines of scars. Whatever had been in that tube must have been more of Brendel's amazing medicine. It was a miracle! But what other miracles had Brendel been withholding? On Parnassus, 10 years ago. Time in the prison barracks dragged on forever. No wonder the people of Aratu craved entertainment. The taste of raw skin wolf clung to her lips, and Siv wished for anything to happen. Vrad appeared in the doorway several times, pulling people out and shoving new people in. The new prisoners all seemed to be from Aratu, as they wore bright clothes and were more anxious than terrified, as if they harbored hope that they might please the crowd and earn the Aratu's favor. Phasma was asleep all that time, her back to the room as she curled on her side toward the wall, which was unusual. Phasma was generally alert and protective, popping awake at any possible threat. Whatever Brendel had given her must have been strong medicine indeed. Finally, Vrad appeared in the doorway and gestured to Phasma's back.
Wake your fighter if she can see out of those black eyes. It's time to entertain the Aratu.
Siv had been dozing and she went to wake Phasma, but Brendel was already there. He had her helmet in his hands, and she snatched it from him and put it on before she stood. She said nothing as she led her people to the doorway. Torben, at least, was back to his old self, fully recovered. Gosta's limp was gone, although she wasn't in full fighting form and would have been useless on the uneven ground of the Skyre. They followed along behind Phasma, Brendel, and the other two troopers, and Siv felt a strange thing. Fear. Going into a fight, she generally felt more alive and relished a challenge, but now, when she thought about going back into that arena without any weapons, she went cold and numb. The door slid open and the crowd inside stomped in their seats, whistling and calling for blood. Those vicious cheers had stunned her the first time, but now it was just noise. The Aratu waited on his throne, flanked by his purple-robed company, covered in colorful birds and rubbing his hands in glee. He stood and the crowd went silent, so quiet that Siv could hear the sand crunching beneath her feet.
What shall we have today?
The Aratu called through his booming machine. Siv shivered as the chant went up.
Randerus! Randerus! Randerus!
It was like living the same moment over again as the big man plowed his path through the crowd, clapping hands and pumping his fist. He leapt down to the sand and bowed to the Aratu, who raised his hands for silence.
And what kind of toys should we give him this time?
The noise of the crowd built to a mad gabble, and the Aratu giggled.
Did someone say swords?
The door through which Randerus had exited the day before slid open, and someone threw three swords out onto the sand. They were different enough that Siv assumed they'd been taken from previous prisoners. One was clunky and made of droid chunks and saw bits. One was fine and slender, and one looked more like the twisted glass they'd pulled from the blaster-struck sand. The weapons had barely landed before Phasma and Siv were running for them, the two fastest Skyre warriors determined to claim the weapons they so desperately needed. Randerus was closer, and he picked up the two heavier swords and turned to face them, grinning, a blade in each huge hand. With silent understanding born of years fighting side by side, Phasma and Siv split up, each approaching from a different angle, both vying to get the third sword still sitting on the ground behind Randerus. Of course, that was exactly what Randerus was trying to prevent, and he struck out at Phasma first, thinking her to be the more dangerous target. Siv had known he would do that, and she slid to the sand on one hip, skidding past him and wrapping her fingers around the third sword's hilt as Randerus sliced the air where Phasma had been standing. He was bigger, but he was slower, even with Phasma hindered by her armor. She rolled and came back up just out of reach, and his next swing seemed to slowly arc over her head as she stepped easily past it. While he recovered his balance, Siv focused on his left hand, holding the sword he hadn't yet used. His offhand. One quick slice of her blade and that sword fell to the ground in a gush of blood, along with one of his fingers. Randorus spun on Siv as she danced out of reach and handed her sword to Phasma. It was beautiful how Phasma's posture changed the moment she had a weapon in hand. She rolled her shoulders back and got into fighting stance before darting forward to hack at Randorus' arm. He stepped back, narrowly avoiding Phasma's sword, and Siv ducked and picked up the sword Randorus had dropped. When he spun to slash at Siv, Phasma darted in and sliced the backs of his knees.
Torben!
Phasma shouted. She pointed with her sword and the big man came running, planting himself where she'd indicated, directly in front of the Aratu, whose face was lit with bloodlust and excitement. Randorus turned on Siv now, his face racked with pain and fear as he sliced down right where she'd been standing, narrowly missing her. As soon as he turned away from Phasma, she jabbed a sword into his back, twice, fast, once on the right and once on the left, as if skewering meat. Which she had. His kidneys. When Randorus turned back to deal with Phasma, Siv slashed at his ankles, bringing him to his knees, the sword still in his right hand, as his left hand dripped blood. The big man's face was red with rage, but he was losing a lot of blood, and his balance as well. Phasma hacked at his right hand, forcing him to drop the blade and leaving him weaponless. Siv moved to her side, ready to do whatever Phasma commanded. Although the attitude in the Skyre was that death should be quick and a matter of business when necessary, they were all aware now that theatricality would get them fed, and that if Randorus had to die, it might as well be in a way that would benefit them the most. Siv kicked him over, and Phasma put a foot on Randorus's spine. They all looked up to the Aratu. His face was lit with excitement, as if he didn't even mind losing such a fine fighter. Taking his three colorful scarves in hand, he held them up, and the crowd screamed and cheered along with his coterie of birds. At last, he chose the green scarf and threw it down.
"Randorus is free," he said.
Little good it would do the man, Siv thought. If they truly had no medicine here, as Vrod had told them, Randorus would be dead within hours. But the crowd didn't seem to care. Everyone stood in the bleachers, cheering and waving their flags. The door opened, and a hand within beckoned. But Randorus couldn't stand, and Phasma did not run for the door. She switched the sword to her left hand and stepped off Randorus, moving around to where his face lay in the sand. Her fingers clenched into fists, and she pulled up his head by his hair, reared back, and punched Randorus in the face, splattering his broad nose with a crunch. Blood gushed down his chin, and he made a noise halfway between a shout and a blubber, scrabbling in the sand for his lost sword. Phasma stepped forward and kicked it far away, and Randorus reached for her, his great clumsy paws closing on thin air as she danced back. The crowd exploded, half excited and half furious.
"Is this not what you really want?"
Phasma shouted to the crowd, her sword raised.
"Death by a thousand cuts, 100 punches!
The crowd was becoming a mob now, screaming and shouting and stomping. They were so loud that they drowned out whatever the Aratu was shouting into his amplification machine. Phasma held their attention completely.
"Would you like to see a real show?"
They begged for it, and even the Aratu stopped his shouting to watch. Phasma looked around the arena, noting where all her people waited. Gosta with Brendel behind the two stormtroopers. Siv by her side, sword in hand. Phasma jerked her chin at Torben where he awaited her command.
"Torben, kneel!"
she shouted. Then quietly,
"Siv, kill Randorus, but do it in an entertaining fashion. And a little slow."
Siv nodded and looked at Randorus, considering for the first time how to kill someone slowly and for someone else's sick amusement. Now that the big man had been bested, she felt no love for the fight. He was on hands and knees, his multiple wounds gushing blood to mix with the sand, his head down and his nose a mess. She leapt onto his back, standing on him as if he were a rock, and the crowd went mad. Raising her sword, she yelled back at them, feeling their energy thrum through her. Still, no inspiration came, and her heart couldn't turn to wanton murder. The moment faded away, her sword unused in her hand. Luckily, the crowd's attention shifted, heads swiveling to follow Phasma. Siv hopped off the broken man's back and stepped out of range to watch the real show. Phasma was running for Torben at full speed. The big man had knelt, his back to Phasma per her orders. Siv realized what was happening a second before it occurred. Phasma ran at Torben, leapt onto his back, and used him as a springboard to catapult herself directly into the Aratu's box, where she sliced her sword in a flawless arc that slashed the man's head from his shoulders in one clean stroke. It happened so quickly that the Aratu was still grinning when his head flew through the air to land on the sand of the arena. His birds took to the air screaming as his body fell, and the violet-robed elders leapt out of the box and into the stands, melting into the crowd. The Aratu's four guards barely had their swords out of their sheaths before Phasma had dispatched them all. What happened next was so strange that Siv thought she must be dreaming. The entire arena erupted in cheers. They weren't screaming and panicking. They weren't mustering to destroy their leader's attacker. They were whistling, screaming, shouting, stomping. They loved it. Phasma stood there by the Aratu's throne, and Siv had to assume her leader was just as confused by the crowd's response, although her helmet hid her emotions. Brendel and his stormtroopers marched across the sand to stand looking up beside Siv and what was left of Randorus. The once great Aratu warrior had fallen to the ground, his breathing shallow. Killing him didn't feel like a victory, so Siv left him lying there and hurried to help Gosta and join Torben. They watched as Brendel's stormtroopers helped him clamber up into the stands beside Phasma. He was not an athletic man, and it was not a smooth enterprise. Picking up the Aratu's voice projector, Brendel raised Phasma's arm and said,
"Behold your new Aratu, Phasma!"
The crowd went insane, their chant coalescing into the word Aratu, screamed with a near religious fervor alongside Phasma's name. "Phasma! Phasma! Phasma!" Torben leaned in towards Siv.
"If they think Phasma is their Aratu, will they ever allow us to leave this cursed place?"
he asked. "I don't know," Siv said, "but I hope Brendel Hux has a plan." Torben helped everyone up to join Phasma and Brendel in the Aratu's box. The stormtroopers pulled the big Skyr warrior up last. The crowd went on cheering and chanting, but no one seemed to know what to do. A few of the colorful squeeps tried to land on Phasma's shoulders, and she batted them away. Finally, Vrod of the White Hand appeared beside the throne. As if Brendel had been waiting just for him, he bowed his head the tiniest bit and said,
"Ah, Vrod. Good. Please take the new Aratu to her tower."
Vrod grinned and bowed back.
"An interesting tack, to be sure, but that's not how it works. The Aratu is chosen by..."
"No, she's not." Phasma stepped between them, the blood-slick sword still in her hand. "I have defeated your champion and your Aratu, and I claim the throne. Unless you wish to challenge me for this position, it is mine."
"The people will never stand for it."
Phasma chuckled. "Oh, they won't?" Stepping forward, She raised both her arms and began shouting,
Aratu! Phasma! Aratu! Phasma!
Into the amplifier. The people nearest the box reached for her, their faces alive with joy and excitement as they took up the chant along with her.
Is she your Aratu?
Brendel shouted through the machine.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Came the call. Brendel turned back to Vrod, hands out, grinning.
Sounds like the people have spoken.
Vrod let the chant go on, and Siv could see him silently calculating. Finally, he exhaled and gestured to a door behind the throne.
Fine. We'll figure it out tomorrow. The crowd's too excited to get anything done just now. You have no idea what it means to be the Aratu.
We know it means we'll get to sleep off the floor and with full bellies,
Torben said.
For now, that's good enough.
As you say.
Vrod led them out into a different hall and into a turbo lift just like the one that had delivered them into the mines at Terpsichore Station. This one went up, and when it stopped, the doors opened onto a hall that was painted a garish red and hung with layers of colorful fabrics. Strange images and objects decorated every wall and surface. Pictures and statues of people and beasts that Vrod dismissively called art. Many of them were dressed in the same red drapery the Aratu had worn and appeared like gods, with halos and lightning and worshippers surrounding them.
The Aratu is more than a leader,
Vrod explained.
The Aratu is an idea. The heart of the city, the voice, the tenor, the sacrificial lamb.
That part doesn't sound good, Siv said. Vrod inclined his head to her.
You just watched it happen. When the Aratu is failing us or deemed unworthy, things tend to take care of themselves.
How did the previous Aratu die? Vrod held open a door, motioning them into the room beyond.
The crowd tore him limb from limb.
The chamber they entered was designed for royalty and had every imaginable comfort. The bed was big enough to fit their entire group. Tables were laden with fruits and bottles of colorful liquids, and soft rugs covered the floor. Several people dressed in matching purple outfits knelt around the edges of the room, their heads and eyes down. Across the back wall, words spelled out something that looked quite fancy, but of course Siv couldn't read. Later on, Brendel told her what it said. Aratu Station, Constar Fabric Division.
You're dismissed,
Vrod said to the servants, and they hurried out without looking up.
Now that you're the Aratu, for better or for worse, there are some things you should know,
Vrod said, availing himself of the dainty selection of fruits.
As I already mentioned, half the city is starving to death. Our machines can turn sand into any kind of fabric, but we can't make food. There are too many people, and not enough land, plants, or beasts, and we've nowhere to go.
But Phasma ignored him and walked away to look out a wide window.
So that's why loss of life doesn't matter to you, Brendel said. How interesting.
Vrod nodded.
Sadly, yes. Anyone who dies means that much more food for those who remain. We've become quite selfish, I'm afraid, and far less picky. There are restrictions on childbearing, and those too old or sick to contribute must be euthanized. Perhaps you begin to see why entertainment is so crucial. It's the only thing that can take the people's minds off their empty bellies and dying friends.
Has it always been this way? Brendel asked. Has there never been proper government?
Vrod pointed to the words painted on the wall.
When Constar came, this was a fertile valley surrounded by crops and trees and filled with plants and animals. And then, well, you know what happened everywhere. The weather changed. The sand crept in. Only the walls and our last remaining spring keep the desert from claiming us all. The spring has begun to slow, though,
and it's clear our prosperity will never return. We've grown desperate. What happens in the arena? Those are the death throes of our people.
Very poetic, Brendel said, sneering. But what does it mean to us?
Well, since you've gone to the trouble of getting rid of one perfectly good Aratu and replacing him with an outsider who doesn't know our ways, it's up to you to figure out how to keep the people from rioting in the streets. The problem with being the visible leader of a failing regime is that they tend to go for your head first.
Is there a governing council? Elected officials? Religious leaders?
There is only the Aratu, his guards and court and the sentries, led by me. Every time we try to have another kind of government, they all just stab one another in the back. It was easier this way. One fool in charge of a bunch of fools.
And what do your sentries do besides attack travelers in the desert? At that, Vrad threw back his head and laughed.
That's one part of it. If you're hungry, it's easier to eat strangers than people you know. Meat's meat when everyone is starving. There's also the hope that we'll find some loot in their packs that might help us out of this mess. Seeds, technology. So many people are carrying artifacts around that one of them might eventually help us. Every Constar station had a specialty, see? That means that somewhere out there is a facility like ours that can make food. We've sent out scouts, but no one has ever returned. Now we never go farther than the pit that trapped you. Fuel is running scarce, too.
He swatted at a bright yellow drapery.
But we have plenty of useless, pretty fabric. We'll be the best-dressed corpses on the planet one day soon.
You're optimistic,
Torben said, stuffing a fruit into his mouth. So how can we help? Siv asked, looking to Phasma, who continued to ignore the conversation, and instead moved around the room, looking out every window with a pair of quadnocks she'd found somewhere among the Aratu's piled things.
We don't need to help.
Brendel poured himself a drink, sniffed it, and sipped.
It's not our business. We can't fix what's broken here.
But people are dying.
Then their leaders made grave mistakes again and again. This place could have been a paradise.
Look, Vrad said. The problems plaguing us today were made by our parents and grandparents, most of whom are gone.
If you have any experience in these matters and wish to truly act as Aratu, be my guest.
You can't make it much worse. But the truth is that you're stuck here with us and we're all going to die. So you might as well do what all the other Aratus have done. Come to the arena and encourage a lively evening so that people will stop killing one another. Or worse, realize that if they banded together, they could storm this tower and kill us all.
No.
Everyone turned to Phasma.
We will not stay here,
she continued.
You will. You're the Aratu. The people have chosen you, and it can't be helped. You might control the arena, but I control the gates.
I can change that.
Phasma stepped closer, and Vrad took a wary step back. Phasma's sword slashed so quickly that it was barely a flash of silver. Siv had forgotten that her leader was still armed. When Phasma stood still again, her sword was wet with blood, and a patch of red bloomed against Vrad's robes.
But,
he started.
That is what I think of your Aratu,
Phasma said.
This is no way to rule.
Vrad fell, his eyes searching the ceiling. Siv squatted beside him and took his hand. Where are our things? The ones you took? She asked. Vrad pointed toward a corner, and Gosta hurried to it and opened the door. A pile of bags sat within, and Siv recognized her own. Without a word, Gosta brought them to her, and Siv pulled out a detraxer.
No, that tech might be useful,
Vrad sputtered.
Siv held his hand tightly, knowing his time was short.
Medicine?
He asked.
Shh.
His hand was going cold, his lips blue. The rug underneath him was soaked in red.
Fix me.
Some situations have no solution, Siv whispered as he drew his last breath. Sending up the prayer, she set about recovering what she could from the fallen man. A great sense of well-being thrummed through her now that she was reunited with her detractors and able to help her people. As if reading Siv's mind, Phasma stepped forward and spoke.
Gather your things. Eat and take what you need. Collect all the water and food you can carry. We must leave here and be on our way. This place has been poisoned, and there is no saving it. I can see General Hux's ship from the window, and we've a long way to go still.
Even Brendel nodded agreement. Perhaps it was the borrowed veil of the Aratu, but there was a new power to Phasma, as if she'd become something more in this dying city. As if in taking the Aratu's head, she'd also taken his authority.
Go on! Now!
Phasma snapped, and both the Skyre folk and the stormtroopers hurried to prepare themselves. As for Brendel, he merely continued enjoying the Aratu's food and drink, and took up the Quadnox to look out the window for himself. Their old clothes were gone, probably tossed out somewhere near the barracks. As Siv finished harvesting Vrod's essence with her detraxer, Torben found his weapons and Gosta put on her mask, sighing with relief. The stormtroopers strapped their blasters back on, and Brendel left the window and pawed through his own sack in his usual secretive way. Phasma methodically added her blaster, axe, and spear to her costume, although she kept the white helmet on and left her old helmet and her red mask in her pack. They split up the food on the table, wrapping it in whatever bits of cloth they found lying around. There was more than enough of that, after all. Brendel searched the room until he found a screen like the ones at Terpsichore Station, this one hidden by draperies. After several attempts, he was able to enter the system and study the layout of the large factory. He pointed out the hangar where the Gavs would be waiting, and he and Phasma debated the best way to get there. They still hadn't seen another person besides Vrod and the servants he'd helpfully sent out.
"Anyone we encounter in the halls must be dispatched silently," Brendel said.
"Even the innocent ones?"
Gosta asked.
Brendel rolled his eyes. "You've got to think of yourself as a soldier now. You're in a war, and no one is innocent. It's them against us, and they've proven that they'll gladly capture, beat, or kill whoever they want. You heard, Vrod. Loss of life is an everyday occurrence here. We'll only get one chance to break out. After that, we'll be watched and probably imprisoned. If anyone gets in your way, destroy them."
"They are an attacking force,"
Phasma added.
"And you know how we treat attacking forces."
Gosta nodded, but her lips twisted. The girl was conflicted, and Siv shared her doubts. For all that Vrod and his sentries had been cruel, the majority of the population was pitiable. When she looked to Torben, she noticed the little furrow between his brows that suggested he wasn't happy. But she also saw the firm set to his jaw that promised he'd do what had to be done anyway. Phasma didn't have to ask if her people were ready. All she had to do was move to the door and tilt her head. Siv still didn't know how Phasma was functioning after being beaten nearly to death by Randorus yesterday. But she wasn't about to ask. Whatever medicine or magic Brendel had saved for that desperate moment had served its purpose. The helmet was becoming Phasma's new mask, and as long as she was wearing it, Siv wouldn't incur her wrath by trying to discover the other woman's feelings. She merely stood, collected the bags containing her things and the detraxers, and took her usual place between Torben and Gosta, her blade and blaster in her hands, ready to fight. The door slid up smoothly. Outside the room, the servants waited in a row, their backs to the wall and their heads down. Siv wasn't sure if this was what Brendel meant about people getting in their way, but she understood the moment the troopers began shooting, well, executing, the servants with their blasters, and her heart sank.
Hurry!
At Brendel's call, they looked to Phasma and followed her, just as if they were back home in the Skyre. Phasma jogged ahead easily, blaster and sword in hand, leading the group down the twisting hallways she'd memorized from Brendel's map. At first, they didn't encounter anyone. But then Siv heard a soft, "Hey!" and watched a woman's body slide off Phasma's spear and crumple to the ground. So that was how it was now. No questions asked. No one given the chance to sound the alarm. When she heard footsteps in the hall behind them, Siv spun and sliced the interloper in one smooth motion. She'd long ago learned that the only way to survive was to do whatever Phasma told her to. Perhaps she'd disobeyed in the arena with Randorus, who was already dying, but now she would not dare to disappoint. They had to escape and find Brendel's ship. She had to keep her baby safe, no matter what. They found the hangar door, and Brendel tapped in the code. The door slid up, and all of Vrod's sentries looked up from where they sat around a table, playing a game with colorful bits of fabric.
"Where's Vrod?"
someone asked. And that someone took a blaster bolt to the chest. Siv stepped forward and stood her ground between Torben and Phasma, waiting to see what steps her leader would take. Without a word, Phasma began shooting before Vrod's people even stood up from their game. The air filled with the sound of blaster fire, bolts of red lighting up clouds of smoke. Soon, Siv could smell roasting meat, and there was no one left breathing around that table. The Aratu sentries' untouched weapons lay strewn on the ground around them, bits of machines and clubs like those from the Skyre fallen beside ancient blasters on the smooth white floor.
"Get in the gavs,"
Brendel urged, as he tapped in a code to open the huge hangar door.
"Those three."
The two stormtroopers unplugged the vehicles, and each of them took the wheel of a spike-covered gav, with Brendel helming their old, undecorated vehicle. Siv jumped in with one of the stormtroopers, pulling Gosta with her. Torben was with the other trooper, while Phasma rode with Brendel. Gray sand danced in through the open door, swirling across the swept floor as the machines revved and spun out into the desert and the growing darkness. Siv held on tightly, one arm around Gosta and one on the vehicle's handle. The trooper was driving as if a mob of angry citizens was on their tail, following Brendel at an impossible speed. The open door yawned black behind them as they accelerated into the desert. It was clear from his path that Brendel was hoping that the farther they got from the city walls, the less likely they'd be to hit more traps like the one that had claimed both their speeder bikes and later Ellie's life. Siv couldn't help looking back at the city, at that strange dark blot in the middle of the desert, now lit by colorful lanterns, feeling that she'd left some small piece of herself behind. She had not known Ellie well, but they'd been soldiers in the same war, breathed the same air and fought the same fights, and she felt some regret that Ellie's body had been left alone to a room full of desperate people instead of receiving the last rites of Siv's detractors that would allow the woman to live on by protecting the health of her friends. Brendel and the troopers had not even acknowledged the woman's death. Siv had not had many regrets before then, but she suspected that the farther they got from the Skyre, the more she would collect. She put a hand on her belly and told herself that it would all be worth it to successfully deliver a healthy child somewhere among the stars, where none of her ancestors had been for generations. Siv couldn't relax, not as long as Aratu's walls were visible. She knew there were traps here, possibly worse ones than the pit they'd encountered, and the afternoon was winding down to a sinister darkness. She also knew that even with Vrod and his sentries dead, there would be plenty of people in Aratu violently desperate for a way out of their current limbo. She glanced back nervously, scouring the gray horizon for more vehicles or a line of people with torches, screaming and cheering and stomping their feet, hungry for something that life had denied them. How strange that this part of Parnassus suffered from too many people, whereas the greatest issue facing the people of the Skyre was too few people. There wasn't much food back home, and every drop of water was hard-earned. but at least everybody was welcome, useful, given meaning. Meaning beyond one's weight in meat. Finally, the dunes hid the darkening walls and rising tower of Aratu. No further traps had sprung, and Siv was able to relax just the smallest bit and focus on the journey ahead. The sun set like a drop of red fire into a still, gray pool, a rioting rainbow with a foul end that left the world a cold nightmare. Night fell completely, and the desert became a quiet and monochrome place. The drivers slowed their speed and turned up their bright lights. Ahead, the cool sands glittered like jewels before disappearing into indigo shadows. Gosta fell asleep against Siv's shoulder, and after watching the endlessly rolling sands a while longer, Siv tipped her head over and found her own escape in dreams. She woke to the last thing she wanted. A fight. 25. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. It started with whispered quarreling, and Siv tensed, her senses already on high alert. Her vehicle had stopped, and the stormtrooper who'd driven it was gone. She knew well enough not to jerk awake noticeably, but merely kept her breath even as she waited, curled up against Gosta, and listened.
The ship is that way, General Hux. I saw it from the tower, as did you.
And the last time we went that way, Phasma, we lost one of my soldiers and ended up in a ditch. We were captured by the enemy and lost precious time. You were nearly killed.
But I lived, and we escaped. We've gone this far without finding another trap. As Vrod said, it's unlikely the sentries would range such a distance from their city walls. They are cowards.
How would you know what another people might do? You've only ever known one people, whereas I have visited and studied hundreds of societies.
I only need to know the people of my planet to know what they would do. And you are not of this planet.
In the tense silence that followed, Siv could hear the troopers somewhere nearby laughing and Torben snoring. So they'd stopped to camp. She realized she was holding her breath, and she forced herself to breathe as if asleep so she could continue eavesdropping. For all that she had hopes for Brendel's ship, there was still so much she didn't know about what would happen once they reached it. Finally, Brendel sighed, and she could imagine him rubbing the space between his eyes.
No, I'm not from this pathetic, limping, wounded, rotten rock. I'm a general in the First Order, and I'm the savior who will get you off this miserable planet and give you the chance to become something real. Something more than just an animal squabbling among weaker animals for some pathetic bone. But if you are to join me, you must look to your pride, Phasma. You must learn to gracefully accede to a superior's will.
Not if I know I'm right.
Would you rather be right, or would you rather be alive?
A long silence suggested eloquently that they both knew who was more deadly and who would survive a one-on-one fight.
Allow me to appeal to your intellect, then, Brendel said. I value subordinates willing to trust my vast training, wisdom, and knowledge instead of challenging me in front of others. That's who I will need once my ship comes. That's what the First Order needs.
And I value experience and a first-hand understanding of an environment. I value a backbone and an unwillingness to yield in the face of foolishness and shouting. That might not be what makes the best soldier, but it does make the best leader of soldiers. And you, after all, already have plenty of soldiers.
Brendel made a humming exhalation, almost a concession, but still a warning.
Do not forget that once we're off this planet, I am the arbiter of life and death for you and your people.
And do not forget that as long as we're on this planet, I will be the one playing that role.
Brendel sighed, and Siv could hear him scratching at his scrubby beard.
Perhaps you are right. You would never make a proper soldier. But if you could begin that way, hide your hubris and play by the rules for a while, I feel certain you would rise quickly through the ranks
to a position of leadership that would satisfy you. And then, together, we could train the greatest soldiers ever seen. With my simulations and your experience, your dedication, we'd be unstoppable. You are a sword, but even the strongest, sharpest sword requires honing. A chuckle from Phasma.
And what would you know of swords?
How to obtain them, pay for them, give them to thousands of soldiers, and let them loose on a world that needs subjugating. There's as much power in controlling the distribution of swords as there is in wielding one.
There's more power in the crucible that forges the weapon.
But someone has to pay for that crucible. In the long pause that followed, Siv could hear the troopers talking, tearing dried meat with their teeth. It was a still night, and sounds carried. She risked opening her eyes, and in the low light she could barely make out Phasma and Brendel leaning against the hood of her Gav, eating jerky and the small fruits from the Aratu's tower.
Perhaps your point is valid,
Phasma said at last.
All my weapons were found things I learned to adapt, not pretty things given to me as a favor. But I tire of politics. The fact remains that the ship is that way, and if we waste any more time, we may find it stripped to nothing by the time we reach it. We are not the only scavengers on Parnassus, and I sense that we're being followed.
By whom? The remaining fools of Aratu? Phasma was silent for a beat before saying,
Whoever they are, they're definitely fools.
Then a strange sound. Phasma and Brendel Hux laughing. Although they were often together, Siv had wondered if their relationship might become more. Their stiff posture and the space between them suggested it had not and never would. The chuckle fell off, and Brendel took up the pair of quadnocks, and Phasma watched him, one hand on her blaster as if she might still be trying to decide whether he was more useful alive or dead. Brendel put down the quadnocks and tapped his fingers on the Gav's hood. As time runs out, so do our options. We'll go your way, but we'll send one of the other vehicles out in front to spring any traps that might be lying in wait. The one with your two women and PT-2445. If we have to lose anyone, that's our best bet.
No. Siv and Torben can ride together. We'll say that Gosta will need to lie down, so she'll be the only one of my warriors in that vehicle. Siv has the detraxers, and they may yet be what saves us. The liniment and salve are more powerful than you realize. A great deal of sand still separates us and your salvation.
Siv went cold to her toes as it sank in that the two leaders were deciding who among their company was expendable. Of only 7 people, 2 had been chosen as an acceptable sacrifice. For all that she was horrified and insulted that Brendel considered her disposable, Siv could see the wisdom in it. Gosta was young and still sore from the crash, and she had no extraordinary skills. Still, seeing reason didn't mean it was right. Siv loved Gosta like a sister, and she would try to find a way to keep the girl from being sent out ahead like bait for trouble.
We'll ride at sunrise, then, Brendel said. Best get sleep while you can.
Phasma didn't answer, but Siv could sense annoyance rolling off her leader like heat waves. Most likely, Phasma was practicing the skill he'd requested, and not snapping at him for instructing her as if she were some foolish child. Siv began to see why Phasma, the strongest and most daring leader she'd ever met, would bend to such a lesser man. She was banking on getting off-planet, and he was the key to that goal, and any success that followed it. Brendel walked away toward the Gav he'd driven. Soon, Siv could hear him tossing and occasionally groaning or sighing as he shifted position. It was ultimately much more comfortable to lean on someone you trusted, she thought, her cheek still on Gosta's shoulder. But who would Brendel Hux ever trust? Who could he trust? No one. And so he deserved that hard, cold, cramped, full seat to himself. Phasma was pacing around Siv's vehicle, and finally she took off her helmet and set it down with a heavy sigh. Siv watched through her lowered lashes
as Phasma put her hands on the Gav's hood, her shoulders shaking. With rage or sadness? It was impossible to tell. Knowing Phasma as she did, probably a combination of the two. For all that Parnassus had become a daily hell in which their people could barely scrape by, and often went to bed freshly grieving and panting for water, it was still home. And leaving home for the stars that had always seemed so impossibly far away was an enormously daunting possibility. Phasma had not spoken of defying and abandoning Keldo, but her warriors had known they could never go back. Even if Brendel's ship had been reduced to ash, the Skyre was no longer a possibility. Phasma, Torben, Gosta, they had become Siv's only family. Not that it stopped Siv from missing Keldo. She wasn't sure if it was suicide or not, but Siv slipped out of the vehicle and walked around silently to where Phasma stood. The warrior had straightened and was looking through the Quadnox, back at the dunes they'd left behind.
"Are you okay?" Siv asked softly.
Phasma did not put down the Quadnox, which meant Siv couldn't see her eyes, or even much of her face. But she could see the tear tracks glimmering in the moonlight.
"I'm fine."
Phasma's tone was clipped, a perfect mimic of Brendel's.
"What are you looking for?"
Phasma didn't answer.
"I'm surprised you're looking behind us instead of forward," Siv ventured.
Phasma snorted and put the Quadnox back on the hood, careful to keep her back to Siv as she leaned against the vehicle and crossed one boot over the other. It occurred to Siv that she hadn't seen Phasma's face since she'd slept off her beating. Perhaps the proud warrior didn't want the others to see and pity her pain. Or perhaps, thanks to Brendel's medicine, she was perfectly healed and trying to hide it.
"In my experience," Phasma said, "it's the thing that sneaks up behind you that's the real threat, not the one that faces you."
Siv leaned against the opposite side of the hood, her back to Phasma's.
"So you trust the strangers?"
"Of course not. But you know as well as I do that the Skyre is dying."
Phasma chuckled sadly.
"Only one child. Frey will be the only one of her generation, and she'll die alone."
"There might be more children," Siv ventured.
"Not if their mothers can't bring them forth.
Perhaps it's the air here.
Perhaps there's some vital ingredient that the planet no longer provides. Perhaps almost starving is not the ideal way to conceive new life. But you've lost too many children already. You may yet lose the one you carry."
That answered one question Siv had wondered about. Phasma had always been sharp. But did she know it might be Keldo's?
"The medicine on their ship will fix it," Siv said.
"That is the hope."
"Do you think..."
Siv started. But she stopped herself, worried that she was probing too deeply.
"Do I think?"
Phasma's rare, gentle tone suggested, for once, that Siv might continue.
"Do you think the First Order will come back and help all our people?
Bring them to the stars, too, or take them to richer lands, or at least drop some supplies? So rich a people should have more than enough to share. I hate to think of Keldo..."
"Do not speak his name again to me!"
The night went especially still and quiet after Phasma's harsh bark, which seemed to tear unwillingly from her throat.
"They could help him, too,"
Siv finished in a far meeker voice.
"His leg is only a problem because Parnassus is so cruel. Perhaps there are other functions he could perform with their help. He is an intelligent man, resilient. He could be useful."
Phasma's fist hit the hood of the vehicle with a clank.
"That's not my problem anymore. He made his choice, and he made the wrong one. Let him suffer for it."
Pushing away from the Gav's hood, Phasma snatched up the Quadnox and a few of the remaining fruits, which released a sweet, syrupy fragrance into the night, as if they might begin rotting at any moment. She walked to the top of the nearest dune, retracing the swiftly disappearing tracks of their vehicle, and leaving her own shifting boot prints like a small river in the vast gray. Sitting on top of the dune, she put the Quadnox to her eyes and stared back in the direction they'd come from, back toward the Skyre. Siv didn't think of Phasma as someone who valued nostalgia or regret. Which meant, as Phasma had just told Brendel, that she suspected they were being followed. Their conversation over, Siv ate most of the remaining fruits.